Hello there. Today is Tuesday, May 28th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump contradicts advisors on North Korea and defends Kim Jong-un.
Someday, we'll have a deal. I'm not in a rush.
Record turnout and a sign of what's growing in priority following European Union elections. Also ahead, an oldie but goodie remake crushes the competition in U.S. movie theaters over the long holiday weekend. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump says he knows that his advisors think that North Korea violated UN Security Council resolutions when it fired off short-range missiles earlier this month. But speaking in Japan at a news conference with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, President Trump says perhaps North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was just trying to get attention with the tests and that it really didn't matter anyway.
He believes, like I do, that North Korea has tremendous economic potential, like perhaps few other developing nations anywhere in the world. And I think that he is looking to develop that way. He knows that with nuclear, that's never going to happen.
Trump spoke Monday in Tokyo alongside Japanese Prime Minister Abe, who also believes North Korea's recent tests violated UN resolutions. Trump's national security advisor John Bolton agrees, saying sanctions in Pyongyang should remain in place. North Korea Monday responded by calling Bolton a warmonger. Joining us now to talk about the president's comments is George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs Robert Deitz. Thank you for being with us. So what do you make of the president completely disagreeing with his advisors and other world leaders about North Korea's latest missile tests?
I find it disturbing for a couple of reasons. Of course, I have no idea what Mr. Kim is thinking or doing. It's not like I have some secret source of intelligence. But the fact is that intelligence professionals, I mean, that is people who've spent their careers, their professional careers, reach a different conclusion from a president who effectively, well, he's met Kim, what, twice, and aside from that, knows nothing about him, doesn't speak the language, read the language, and so forth. And so it concerns me as an American that we've got a president sort of flying by the seat of his pants, as it were, disagreeing with professionals for who have made a career of this. Second, I think it tends to undermine the professionals in the intel world and at the State Department and Defense Department and so forth. And the third problem, I think, is that it sends all kinds of sort of crazy signals to the rest of the world.
What message does it send to our allies?
It's unclear, and that's one of the problems. Are these thoughts of Mr. Trump just kind of random tweets, or does he mean this seriously? And if so, what is Bolton's effect on Mr. Trump's thinking? What's the State Department's effect, and so forth? And for all these reasons, I think that these musings that he does through his tweets are very unhelpful to the development of American foreign policy.
Well, the other comment that the president said that is raising some eyebrows is regarding former Vice President Joe Biden, who happens to be running for president to get the Democratic nomination and potentially take Trump on. Trump has been going after him for the very reason that Biden is leading in many of the polls among Democrats. But while in Japan, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a comment pertaining to Biden that he's not very intelligent. And when asked about it by reporters, President Trump basically sided with Kim Jong-un instead of the former vice president, saying, well, I have to agree, he's not very bright, and, you know, went on to criticize him on a foreign public stage.
I've given that a fair amount of thought, not for any particular reason, except it's so odd. If you took a poll of most people in America or Europe and asked about Kim Jong-un, most people would say, well, I'm not a big fan, or it's not somebody I admire, or, you know, and sort of starting there and getting worse. And agreeing with a person like Kim, sort of akin to agreeing with Hitler or agreeing with Stalin, is that really helpful for Mr. Trump? Does that really hurt Mr. Biden? I mean, I know I, for one, if I were running for president, I'd love to have Adolf Hitler saying bad things about me. And it seems to me that on this one, I don't see what Mr. Trump what benefit he gets from this. I also think he's reached a level of vulgarity that I think is dispiriting for anybody who thinks a lot about politics and enjoys politics.
Why do you think that so few people in the Republican Party are speaking out when there are comments like that that show disdain? I know there was one, there is one Republican congressman that tweeted just that it was just basically very inappropriate.
Yeah, I think actually there were a couple, but you're right. It's not it's not exactly a stampede inside the Republican Party. I think there are a couple of possibilities. One, giving the benefit of the doubt, is that this behavior of Mr. Trump's is so unusual, so outside the norms, that I think people sort of are taken aback and, you know, hey, I've got to think about this a little bit. And the other possibility is that people are so scared, the Republicans are so scared of incurring Mr. Trump's wrath, that they're unwilling to say even the slightest negative comment about him.
That's George Mason University Professor of Governmental Affairs. Robert Deitz, thanks for your perspective. Well, Euroskeptic parties topped the polls Sunday in the European Parliament elections in Britain, France, and Italy. And across the 28-member European Union, they enjoyed their best ever results in the 5 yearly elections. And as Paris-based journalist Catherine Field tells us, there was record turnout.
Turnout was around 50.5%. Now, that's extraordinary. It hasn't been that high since 1989. What we're reading into that is that people have woken up to the sorts of issues that are affecting Europe, and that these are actually pan-European issues that require pan-European solutions. For example, environment, climate change, security, migration. These are issues that none of the 28 members of the European Union can solve on their own. So these are issues that got everyone motivated. Also, there is a sort of a feeling that individually, European nations, European governments haven't got the power or haven't got the ability to project the power that they need for matters such as security. So it is a new generation that's coming up. A lot of younger people came out and voted. There is a big wave of new voters have come in, and they clearly see that the traditional blocs just are not able at the moment to react to the sort of issues that Europe is facing.
It sounds to me like the far right and the far left are the big winners here. Is that pretty accurate? The liberals versus the very, or I guess you'd call them nationalists?
The nationalists and the populists didn't do as well as they had expected, and certainly as pollsters said. And in fact, when you add them all up together, all of these what we call Eurosceptic parties, perhaps they can muster about 170 MEPs. Now, out of a total number of 751 members of the future European Parliament, that's not enough to really make a big difference. The big winners of the night really have been the Greens Party, whether it be in Germany, where they doubled their votes. In France, they got 13% of the vote compared to 8% last time. All around Europe, we've seen the Greens coming into office. So what does that mean? It means that climate is on the agenda now. And the activism that we've seen throughout Europe, the Fridays for Future demonstrations, that they have touched a core. Also, you're seeing the Liberal Democrats, those pretty much on the center, who have been talking about finding a middle ground. They've done very well indeed. That's going to put a new tilt on pretty much everything that happens within Europe now, particularly in the next 6 months, when the European Parliament has to decide on issues such as who is going to run the executives, who's going to run the budgets, and also they're going to be able to decide on trade deals, because with this new European Parliament, the Parliament has the right to vote either for or against any new trade deals.
Would you say that the election results shift the trend that we have been seeing toward nationalism?
Either way you look at it, you can find you had a winner. The nationalists saying, well, look, we did well. The nationalists and the populists came in top in France. You also have them coming in Italy, Poland, Hungary. But certainly the fact that they didn't get the great numbers that people thought they would, that pollsters thought, perhaps goes to show that the electorate woke up and thought, no, we have to stop this. And there were fears of Euroscepticism and Europopulist movements would win the day, proved to be wrong. Was it overblown, or was it just that the electorate woke up and thought, no, we don't like this? And when you look at places such as France, Marine Le Pen, her party, who got the largest share of the vote, 61% of French voters don't like Marine Le Pen. So perhaps they were also coming out and saying, no, we don't like what you stand for.
Do you think any of the votes in Europe were a reflection of anything happening in the United States with regard to President Donald Trump?
There is a feeling in Europe that America is now the place one ought learn lessons from. There has been a feeling, certainly as Europe looks at the United States, that somehow America has lost its way. And the way that that is viewed is that Europe always relied on America for not just for moral guidance, but also for its security and its economic well-being. The European Union has, since Donald Trump came to power, has made it known to its constituency that Europe is on its own now. It can no longer rely without questioning on the United States. So I think, yes, that played a part in the extraordinary turnout for elections that are usually just shunned, and it has played a role in how people perceive the European Union as an idea that a nation state on its own isn't strong enough to stand up to the forces of, say, China or the United States, but a European Union, 28 nations together, can stand up and can be listened to.
That's Paris-based journalist Catherine Field. Israel is facing a political crisis after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu failed to form a governing coalition. If he's not able to draw enough support by Wednesday night, the parliament will be dissolved and the country will hold new elections on August 28th. VOA's Latika Hoke has more.
In a speech Monday evening, Netanyahu pledged he will do all he can in the next 2 days to avoid a repeat of costly elections.
A lot can be done in 48 hours. The voters' wishes can be respected. A strong right-wing government can be established. We can bring stability and a good government to Israel. I hope people come to their senses and do the right thing.
Earlier Monday, Netanyahu failed to reach a deal with Avigdor Lieberman, the head of the secular nationalist party Yisrael Beiteinu, over a disagreement on the draft law regulating the exemption of Haredi yeshiva students from military service. The exemption has been a controversial issue for many years in the country where military service is obligatory. Lieberman is demanding increased enlistment of ultra-Orthodox or Haredi Jews in the armed forces, with penalties for the institutions that do not comply. The Haredi parties want more exemptions. Netanyahu needs both Lieberman and the ultra-Orthodox parties for a majority coalition.
We want to form a government in which it would be clear that there would be no compromise in the Haredi draft law, not in a comma or a period in it. It's not something we hide.
Israel's parliament on Monday took a first step towards snap elections. It gave preliminary approval to a law to dissolve parliament. Three more votes are required for final approval of the law, which would result in new elections. Benny Gantz, who heads the opposition Blue and White Alliance, opposes the law and says he should be given a chance to build a coalition. Gantz was Netanyahu's chief rival in the April election.
Our faction will oppose dissolution of the Knesset due to the simple reason, among others, that election at this time is a big deception of Israeli politics.
U.S. President Donald Trump expressed his support for Netanyahu in a tweet. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. honors its war dead on Memorial Day. Saudi Arabia downs an attack drone from Yemen. Russia set to host Taliban and Afghan politicians. And Israel could be facing new elections amid a coalition crisis. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Leonardo da Vinci is known today as a renowned painter, architect, inventor, and scientist. Known for painting the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper, da Vinci, according to various historical accounts, was also a procrastinator and left quite a few unfinished projects and works of art, such as his Adoration of the Magi and perhaps even the Mona Lisa itself. A new theory proposed by Professor Marco Cattani, a researcher from King's College London, might provide an explanation for this behavior. Cattani says the great da Vinci may have suffered from attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. Admitting that while it's impossible to make a postmortem diagnosis for someone who lived 500 years ago, Cattani expressed his confidence that ADHD provides the most convincing and scientifically reasonable theory to explain da Vinci's difficulty in finishing his projects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Ghana is preparing for its first digital population and housing census next year, joining Swaziland, Malawi, and Kenya is one of the first countries in Africa to collect data electronically. The government says tablets and satellite imagery will be used to count every Ghanaian and help fight inequality. Sophia Christensen reports from Accra.
Only birds and insects break the silence at a gold mining site in the eastern region of Ghana, at the foot of the Atewa Forest Reserve. Excavators stand still as the two Ghanaian companies operating them wait for a new mining permit, a process that has taken months. But a fresh pile of sludge spilt over a patch of vegetation suggests the mine is being operated illegally. The sludge is dirty wastewater created when gold is separated from sediment, sometimes using mercury. It is stored in dams on the site. Felix Ado Okire works for Ghana's Environmental Protection Agency.
It rained heavily last week. So the embankment of the dam was weak, and then it got broken, and this is the result.
The toxic slime landed a few meters away from a stream that flows into the Birim, a river supplying water to millions of people in the capital, Accra. Ghana cracked down on illegal small-scale gold mining after the National Water Company warned in 2017 that the country would soon have to import all its drinking water if it continued. The government set up a military task force to dismantle illegal mining sites and imposed a 20-month ban on all small-scale mining to give nature a breather. But Global Forest Watch data released last month shows the rate of deforestation in Ghana increased by 60% in 2018, faster than in any other part of the world. Resource Management Officer for Conservation Group Arocha, Daniel Kwamena Ewor, says the ban pushed more small-scale miners to work within the protected Atewa Forest, operating at night when security officials are off duty.
They saw this place as a refuge where they can do mining. So a lot of the youth then went into the forest itself to mine.
Local authorities and NGOs have started training illegal miners to learn alternative livelihood skills, such as soup making and farming bees. But critics doubt these activities are economically viable. Ghana manager for the New York-based National Resource Governance Institute, Nafi Chinnery, believes the campaign has been more about politics than impact.
It's kind of scratching the surface of the core issues of livelihood, which is driving people to go to these sites and to engage in galamsey.
Chinnery says there is a lack of data showing who is involved. Around 1.1 million Ghanaians were estimated to work in small-scale mining in 2016, accounting for about 30% of the country's annual mineral production. EPA's head of mining, Michael Ali, says the government is going to great lengths to sanitize the gold industry by being stricter with paperwork and cracking down on the use of mercury.
This needs to reduce it to the barest minimum. We cannot eliminate it completely unless the citizens themselves police.
The EPA has reclaimed 10 acres of illegally mined land around the Atewa Forest, near the southeastern town of Chebbi. Trees were planted to encourage residents to take initiative and help meet a reclamation target of more than 7,000 square kilometers of land by 2022. In the nearby town of Sejimaze, 65-year-old cocoa farmer Janet Achampong does not know what to do about the gaping pit left on the land she leased to illegal miners 5 years ago. She says she cannot afford to fill the hole herself and reconvert it to farmland. The government has acknowledged money is short and says it is seeking support from the international community. In Sajimaze, Norwegian donors are funding the reclamation of 6 acres of mined land over the next 4 years. Arocha's Ewur is facilitating the project, but says he is wary of growing trees and fruit crops in soil that has been mixed with chemicals.
There is some quantity of mercury in the belly of the land. You know, if you dig deep, you know, in most places you have some quantity of mercury. And then arsenic is also found in the soil.
At least for now, he plans to stay away from the newly planted mangoes. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Ghana.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues.
Oh, great one who summons me, I stand by my oath, loyalty to wishes three.
Moviegoers in the United States chose the familiar over the new over the long holiday Memorial Day weekend. The Walt Disney live-action remake of Aladdin crushed the competition at the North American box office. Joining us now to talk about why it was such a huge success while others with new storylines were not so much, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard is here. Jeff, obviously people were in a mood for something fun and lighthearted.
Well, the thing is, Aladdin, the Disney version from 1992, is a favorite around the world. It is often cited as people's favorite animated cartoon from Disney. And with Robin Williams in those incredible songs, his improvisation through the whole film, it is, of course, a Disney classic. But what Disney's doing now is they're going back to the well. They're going to these original animated cartoons, and they're doing live-action versions of them. We had Jungle Book a few years ago, you know, with Bill Murray doing Baloo the Bear. And this summer alone, not only do we have Aladdin that's out now, but also The Lion King, and also The Jungle Cruise with The Rock is coming out. You know, so it's like Disney's going back to well-known things and putting their own twist on them. Now, Will Smith, who plays the genie in Aladdin, he had a lot of reservations about taking that role because, one, you're going up against Robin Williams. That's an institution. Everyone knows what he did with that genie. And I'm happy to say that he brings not only a little homage to Robin Williams, but he also brings his own. He's funny. He's engaging. It's heartfelt at times. There's action-adventure because it's from director Guy Ritchie, who did the Sherlock Holmes films with Robert Downey Jr. So you've got not only the original songs that you like with The Carpet Ride, with A Whole New World, mm-hmm. and You Never Met a Friend Like Me, but you also have some newer songs in there.
Guy Ritchie, that's Madonna's ex-husband.
Absolutely. So you're thinking, wait a minute, he's directing Disney's Aladdin? And the first 30 minutes when he's running through the town, you know, the little village where they're chasing him, mm-hmm. you think you're watching, it's got his signature style to it. So not only does it have the original songs, but there's a few new songs on there. Amina Massoud, who plays Aladdin, is fantastic. They searched for thousands of people through all these open casting calls because Disney was really sensitive in casting ethnic backgrounds for these actors, right? So you'll have an Egyptian actor, you have an Indian actor. So they were really painstakingly trying to find the right people for the right culture to be sensitive to it. And they have great casting on this. Even the great Jafar is the villain in the film. So, yes, I had a good time with it. I was really surprised. And I have to say it's all because of Will Smith. He is so funny. He brings his own style to the genie. And, of course, it's going to be a huge hit because, you know, people love Genie.
Absolutely. And another one that didn't do so well over the weekend, Sony's horror film Brightburn. Maybe people just couldn't deal with any horror over the weekend.
It's possible. Brightburn is what we have a new genre of superhero film. It's called the horror superhero. And this is from producer James Gunn, who did Guardians of the Galaxy. And the premise is really simple. What if Superman fell to Earth as a baby, and as he got older, he wasn't here for truth, justice, and the American way? He's here to take over the world. So we have this 12-year-old kid. He's going through puberty. That spaceship it's Brightburn, Kansas, by the way. So this family has adopted him after the ship crashed to Earth. It's just like Superman. But when he starts going through puberty, the ship starts calling him, and all of a sudden it starts filling his head with his mission, you know, after 12, 13 years, take over the world. So he's bullied at school, he's super intelligent, and he starts getting some payback. So yeah, it's pretty disturbing to watch this kid, you know, with the powers of Superman and no way to control him, starts tearing up Brightburn, Kansas. This is one of the films I couldn't wait to see this summer, and I can't understand why I didn't like it more than I did. It just seems to go on a little bit tedious. I've been thinking about this movie for like a week now, trying to figure out why didn't I like it more. So, but obviously audiences are turned away by it. I thought the premise was excellent, but it's not connecting with audiences.
All right, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at vegasfilmcritic.com. Stepping away from music to try some Asian food. Rapper Cardi B has been weighing in on Asian delicacies after a visit to an Asian market. Some of the samplings from the Far East include different flavors of ramen, chips, and taiyaki, a Japanese fish-shaped cake filled with bean paste. Also, a bag of tiny crabs she said cut her mouth. She also tried kimchi but said it was just too spicy. No word if she's planning to switch careers and become a food critic. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. As hard as me, I don't bother with these. Don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say ghosts. I'm who they trying to be. Look, I might just chill in some babe. I might just chill with your boo. I might just spill on your babe. My feel like a lake. He want to swim with his face. I'm like, okay. I let him get what he want. He buy me Yves Saint Laurent. In the new wave, when it go fast as a horse, I got the trunk in the front. I'm the hottest in the streets. No, you probably heard of me. Got a bag and fix my teeth. Hope you know it ain't cheap. And I pay my mama bills. I ain't got no time to chill. Think these things be mad at me. They baby father wanna build. Say, Lil, you can fuck with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms. These is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both. I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick cutting. So don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now speak, that means I don't f*** with you. I'm a boss to a worker, I make bloody moves. If you a f***, you get popped. You a goofy, you a op. Don't you come around my way. You can't hang around my block. And I just check my accounts. Turns out I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I put my hand above my hip. I bet you dip, he dip, she dip. I say, I get the money and go. This is high like a stove. My glitter is gold. Tell that little fit her roll. I just a rope and a rose. I just came up in a rave. I need to fill up the tank. No, I need to fill up the safe. I need to let all these know they none of the safe. I go to dinner and steak, only the real can relate. I used to live in the peace, now it's a crib with a gay. Rolly got charms, the life crossed the place. Hard to let these know, just in case he's forgot. I just wanna check the mail, another check from all the stocks. You can fuck with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both, I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting. So don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now speak, that means I don't f*** with you. I'm a boss to a worker, I make bloody moves. Bloody moves.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Jonas Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy.